right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, February 23rd, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Monday. It's 4 degrees and overcast, freezing cold here in upstate New York. We had a heat wave this weekend at like 20 degrees, and we are back in the deep freeze again. So I am just so damn excited. I have water dripping into my cupboards in my kitchen because there's so much damn ice up on the roof. I just hope this winter ends here very shortly. So I just came out to my office, and it is bakingly hot out here. And I have one of our UCY machines running on high with its fans, so I'm not quite sure what's going on, but at least it appears that we're on air at the moment, so hopefully the machine doesn't blow up. I made the mistake this morning of course, digging into some news and found something very disturbing. This was not what I was going to address first thing this morning, but I guess we're going to have to. Merck has done it again. They have come out now with a new version of their Gardasil vaccine. I don't know if anyone had taken a look at the dystopia news feed underneath the Before the First Cup chat, but that's where anything that I'm posting rabidly first thing in the morning will appear if you do not go to FedBook. This is pretty disturbing to me because we've dug into the HPV vaccine before. They use virus-like particles, which is the key phrase, virus-like particles loaded with nanotechnology. And, here, let's find this. I'm going to read you the story that came out of sciencealert.com. Looks like it was approved right at the end of the year. There was an announcement from the FDA in January that I did not catch, and now there is a story February 23rd. It was from this morning. A new HPV vaccine prevents 9 strains of the virus now and could help protect females, and in capital letters, and males from a range of cancers. And yes, just like my pediatrician parroted to me when I asked her about it back couple of years ago, she's like, oh, they prevent anal cancers in boys and girls. Yeah, well, let's read this. The human papillomavirus, whatever they call it, papillomavirus HPV is pretty nasty. Not only can it trigger genital warts, but if it is not controlled by the immune system, researchers have found that it can also lead to a range of cancers, most famously various strains of the virus are involved in more than 99% of cervical cancer cases. Now, we've talked about this before. I mean, pap smears have been effective all this time in detecting cervical cancers. They typically are not fast growing. Like I said before, if they really were going to go after something, they should have come up with a vaccine for something like ovarian cancer that doesn't have really any signs or symptoms until it is in stage 4 and you have some major problems. And there are no tests for ovarian cancer. Most famously, various strains of the virus are involved in more than 99% of cervical cancer cases, but scientists have recently found that HPV can also trigger anal and oral cancers. And although current campaigns are targeted to young women, both males and females could benefit from being protected. Now, this is an Australian publication also, and in the United States, they have been targeting boys, so maybe this is a new thing. They've decided that Merck wasn't making enough profits, and so now they have to go internationally after boys and girls from 9 to 26, I believe is what it is. They're recommending you start at 9. There are already 2 effective vaccines on the market, Gardasil, which is also by Merck, which protects against 4 strains of the virus, and Cervarix, which protects against 2. But new research published in the New England Journal of Medicine has revealed that a new vaccine, Gardasil 9, can protect you against, yes, you guessed it, 9 strains of the virus. Blah, 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 double blind trials. They did a clinical trial of 14,215 women between the ages of 16 and 26 and found that Gardasil 9 can protect against 5 additional strains when compared to Gardasil. This means that the new vaccine could, in theory, prevent 90% of cervical cancers compared to 70% that Gardasil currently stops. Overall, there are 14 strains of HPV associated with cervical cancer out of 100 known strains. So being able to protect against more than half of them is a big step forward. Oh, this stuff just makes me so upset that the way they spin this. And, you know, one of the things, if you pay attention, you'll notice that they are actively pushing this Gardasil vaccine on every other commercial that you hear, saying how important it is to protect your children, pulling on the heartstrings. Yet you're not being told what is really in this vaccine, what the studies have shown, how many deaths there have been. And it's not a pretty picture. So now let's fast forward to FDA.gov. Not that we can trust the FDA after we read that story about all the corruption and the reports that have been published that were found to be fraudulent, that they never retracted. But I found an insert on FDA.gov. And what's interesting is that there was only a part of this insert on Merck's website, but the entire insert was on the FDA's website. And I found something very disturbing once I got down to section 6.2. So let's hold on. I believe that was on page 8. We're going to scroll. Of course, they have like all the adverse reactions. Oh, swollen arm, little bit of dizziness, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that's in the first few pages. But let's get down to section 6.2. Now, this, hold on, let me scroll up because I think this was for Gardasil 9, yes, okay. What's interesting about this, as I was reading it, is that it made me think of the same methodology that they have for approving GMO foods. GMO foods typically get a rubber stamp to be approved. And here's the reason why. Because they're saying that when you have, let's say, an apple that is heritage, that is grown from Mother Nature without us messing around in the genetics of the apple. An apple is an apple. So when we produce a genetically modified apple, like the new ones that just came out that don't brown, we didn't really change the composition of the apple. We just changed how the apple interacts with the environment, let's say. It doesn't brown. And what the FDA has traditionally done in this case is rubber stamp it because it's still an apple. So it's got to be safe, right? Well, we're finding that that isn't necessarily the case. And there's a lot of concern now about not only GMO, but once we've been looking into now how GMO is mutated into using all these crazy technologies like RNAi, RNA interference, and loading things up with nanoparticles in our food, that there's some great concern out there. And they're just allowing all this to go through. Well, we discovered that Gardasil, the original Gardasil, was utilizing virus-like particles. Now, these virus-like particles are not viruses like typically in a traditional vaccine. They would take virus from, let's say, polio, right? Polio. That's an old school vaccine. In the old days, back when my dad was a kid, they typically used live polio. And his cousin actually ended up with polio after getting the vaccination. So then when I was a kid, they decided to start using killed virus. And typically that's what they did my entire childhood. As far as I'm aware, most vaccines were killed. Unless, of course, when we talked about this, you did the nasal vaccines, some of the ones that came out recently. I don't remember if it was for the swine flu or the bird flu. When my daughter was in preschool, one of her friend's parents went all balls out and decided to get her kids vaccinated against whatever flu that was. And she did the intranasal vaccination. And one of the things that I've been reading about the intranasal vaccination is that, and I don't even know if you'd call it a vaccination, antigen, is that they were putting live virus in there. And when they put live virus in, there's a lot of proof that shows that you actually shed the virus for a number of days after being exposed to it. I mean, it's just like being exposed, but the science is the same, whether it's killed or it's live. basically, you're exposing the body to something so that the body recognizes it and your immune system kicks in, attacks it, and kills it, but only in small doses, only enough, so they say, so you don't get it. But so when you really do get exposed to it, your body has white blood cells that'll go kill it. Well, traditionally, I don't have an issue. And I mean, I know that there were issues where people got polio, people got other things, but the way that they outline immunology to work is actually a pretty decent plan. But what's been happening now is that they've been introducing these synthetic particles into vaccines now. We also know about adjuvants. We've talked about that many, many times before with aluminum and squalene, and they've caused all kinds of autoimmune issues and cancers. My cat ended up with cancer. His leg became part of a study, and they had blamed it on the aluminum adjuvant in the 3-year rabies vaccine and told me the 1-year rabies vaccine they discovered was safe. It was the aluminum in the 3-year rabies vaccine. The adjuvants are used to irritate the immune system to be able to extend immunity beyond what it originally was, except that they think, and I mean, here's the thing, we're talking, this was probably close to 20 years ago that happened with the aluminum in the rabies vaccine. So, I mean, if they knew that in animals already, I just can't get over how they're going forward and ahead with all of these off-the-wall technologies now and injecting them into our children. And I just saw now there is a bill out in front of the legislature in California. I saw April from Truth or Talk Radio posted something yesterday, a link to the legislation, showing that they are going to try to do what they're proposing in New York as well. There's a bill up in front of the New York legislature to get rid of objectors, the ability to object because of quote-unquote religious objections to vaccinations. So you won't be able to get out of vaccines at some point in the future. At least our children won't. All right. So I want to take a look, though. So Gardasil, we had established way back when, had these virus-like particles in them loaded with nanotechnology. And the nanotech is where they're loading it up with whatever DNA, I guess, and it's probably synthetic DNA, to then go stimulate your immune system. So I grabbed a title here. This was out of one of the scientific publications where, you know, you got to pay $39.95 to get the whole story, but they always give you a blurb. And it's titled Characterization of Virus-Like Particles in Gardasil, a little registered trademark, by cytotransmission electron microscopy. Cytotransmission electron microscopy is a powerful characterization method for assessing the structural properties of biopharmaceutical nanoparticles, including virus-like particle-based vaccines, VLP. We demonstrate the method using the human papillomavirus, HPV, VLPs in Gardasil. Hey, there we go. Yes, it is nanotechnology that they are injecting into our children in these Gardasil vaccines. So now let's fast forward to this brand new Gardasil 9, just approved by the FDA, and let's look at the FDA insert. So Gardasil's been approved for a while. Let's look at section 6.2. Post-marketing experience, it says. There is no post-marketing experience following administration of Gardasil 9. However, the post-marketing safety experience with Gardasil is relevant to Gardasil 9 since the vaccines are manufactured similarly and contain similar antigens from HPV. Now, we're going to back up the truck because this is what I was saying, the same thing about GMOs. So because Gardasil, they deemed, and incorrectly so, mind you, because Gardasil, they deemed quote-unquote safe or worth the risk, They're just rubber stamping Gardasil 9. Now, Gardasil protected you against four types. This was type 6, 11, 16, and 18. I don't have it in front of me, but Gardasil 9 protected you against a few more HPV types. But they're just going to rubber stamp it because Gardasil was considered, in their eyes, safe. How is that science? That's not science. That's called slippery palms and butt slapping. Let's read a little bit more. Because these events were reported voluntarily, and that's the VRS reports, the Vaccine Adverse Reaction Database, from a population of uncertain size, it is not possible to reliably estimate their frequency or to establish a causal relationship to vaccine exposure. Ha! Wow, listen to that. That should make you feel very confident that injecting the shit into your kid is for your kid's best interest. What we don't really know, and it's all voluntary to report whether or not there were adverse reactions. We don't really know how big the group was or what the relationship was or the relationship to the vaccine. So don't worry about it. The following adverse experiences. Now, remember, this is from the FDA website, so I got to give them at least a half thumbs up for that. But this should be like front page. This should be in the news of this new Gardasil 9 vaccine. This should be in the headline. The following adverse experiences have been spontaneously reported during post-approval use of Gardasil and may also be seen in post-marketing experience with Gardasil 9. Well, how bad could they be? Well, blood and lymphatic system disorders like autoimmune hemolytic anemia, idiopathic thrombocytopenic purpura, which I think is a bruise, lymphadenopathy, respiratory, thoracic, and metatastinal disorders such as a pulmonary embolus, gastrointestinal disorders such as nausea, pancreatitis and vomiting, general disorders in administration at the site, conditions such as anesthesia, chills, death. Oh, death right in the middle there. Fatigue and malaise. Shouldn't death be number one? Immune system disorders like autoimmune diseases. Oh, yeah, don't worry about that. Hypersensitivity reactions, including anaphylactic and anaphylactoid reactions, bronchospasm, and urticaria, musculoskeletal and connective tissue disorders, such as arthralgia, who knows what that is, and malagia. Nervous system disorders such as acute disseminated encephalomyelitis, dizziness, Guillain-Barré syndrome, headache, motor neuron disease, paralysis, seizures, and syncope, including syncope associated with tonic cyclonic movements and other seizure-like activities, sometimes resulting in falling with injury. Transverse myelitis as well, infections and infestations, cellulitis, and vascular disorders such as deep venous thrombosis. Now, those are all, per this report, the following adverse experiences have been spontaneously reported during post-approval use of Gardasil and may also be seen in post-marketing experience with Gardasil 9. Shouldn't they put this somewhere in the ad on TV as they're tugging at your heartstrings, saying that your daughter could get all these horrible forms of cancers if they don't get this vaccination? But hey, we've actually had a test for cervical cancer for many years. I was completely floored while reading that list of post-marketing experience with Gardasil. If I can find the chat, just as I was going on air, actually, my flash all crashed, but I think I'm back. I just dropped that document. It's from FDA.gov into chat. Down at the bottom of page 8, you'll see what I just read. I mean, read the whole thing and weep. It's just unbelievable. So Gardasil 9 has now been approved based upon the safety of Gardasil. And they've done all kinds of tests and exposed all kinds of new young women and probably men to this new vaccine. Remember that there is a lawsuit in India right now against Microsoft, not Microsoft, but Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation in regards to giving out the original Gardasil vaccine without proper informed consent from the girls in India. And there were quite a number of adverse reactions and deaths that had happened in three different villages. All right. So I think we're going to have to hop onto a few other topics. We're still going to stick on the fear porn campaign for all the different things that are now in the news. We saw about this bourbon virus. We talked about that. Oh, I think it was last year, actually, when the guy in Kansas was infected. He was bitten by a tick. And they say that now, and this is the way they're spinning the story now. One of the things that I called out when this bourbon virus first appeared was the fact that it appeared in the heartland in Kansas, never before seen. Oh my God. Be afraid, be very afraid. But one of the things that was happening right around that same time is that they were moving Plum Island, yes, where they had been experimenting with Isle of Dr. Moreau type dangerous pathogens off the coast of New York. And they had literally decided to sell that island. And I'm looking to see if I can find the story because on Friday after the show, I wanted to find out what had happened to Plum Island and if they really had fully moved Plum Island to, yes, Kansas. They were moving all the pathogens to one of the universities there, and I think it was the Department of Homeland Security. Hold on. We'll find it, I hope. Here we go. This is from 2012. And this was in the Homeland Security Newswire. As New York's Plum Island Animal Disease Center begins to shut down, much of its pathogen work will be transferred to Kansas State University's Biosecurity Research Institute in preparation for the opening of DHS's new National Bio and Agri Defense Facility in nearby Manhattan, Kansas. I was like, wow. So they're transferring all these crazy whacked out pathogens from Plum Island to Kansas, and then, lo and behold, never before seen tick-borne virus kills a guy in Kansas. I was like, wow, what a coincidence that is. And it's even more so of a coincidence when you start digging into the history of Lyme's disease. Lyme's disease being spread through ticks. And it's a very strange virus if you look deep into it and how it works with little spigot corkscrew type things. And it can, like, literally hide from treatment in your joints for many years if you can't catch it right away. It's a smart little virus. But not only with the ticks, but the mosquitoes. And hey, now we're working on all this crazy shit. We got those GMO mosquitoes. A new story just came out. People in Florida are finally screaming about the Oxitec GMO mosquitoes that we talked about. So here, let's play a clippy, since I am back in the saddle. Here we go. All right, this is a clip. I think actually this is the same clip that came out last year. Oops, what is that? His from the CDC talking about this bourbon virus. But let's play it anyway to refresh your memory. Here it comes. It's working on it.
It's estimated 300 1,000 people in the U.S. are diagnosed with Lyme disease every year. It's an illness spread by ticks. This summer, a patient came into the University of Kansas Hospital with symptoms similar to most tick-borne illnesses. But after testing the man, doctors were stumped.
It was very frustrating. That's one of the biggest problems with my job, which I love, is when we can't answer those kinds of questions, when we can't help the patients or their families.
People with disease spread by ticks see symptoms like high fever, severe headache, muscle aches, and nausea. Dr. Hawkinson explained the Kansas man didn't respond to typical treatments. He eventually experienced multi-organ failure. Now, 6 months after his death, the CDC determined the man had Bourbon virus. It's named after Bourbon County, Kansas, where the man lived.
We continued to push and have concerns as why did this happen? The CDC was on board with us and were able to help us with that. And we've now identified this new virus.
It's not clear how long this virus has been around or if others have contracted the disease. But doctors hope with this discovery, they'll be able to help others.
This may be a cause of other people's illness as well. And those will be steps that we're going to be looking at with the CDC too.
Hold on, I'm not sure if that was it.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
All right, hold on.
I don't know. I think the cold is gumming up the pipes out here today. Everything is kind of moving syrupy slow. So, yeah, we don't know if anyone else has gotten it, and we don't know. But, hey, this guy's death is going to help save all kinds of people. So, that you know, there's good that comes out of bad. You know, well, this is what I'm seeing here. I mean, this fear porn, right? We started it with what? Swine flu, bird flu. Oh my God, there's an emergency. Declare a state of emergency. Let in all the squalene vaccines from Europe, even though squalene hadn't been approved. Oh, Ebola, oh my God. Let's come up with all these new experimental vaccines and start injecting them into people, even though they were never approved for human trials. But hey, it's an emergency. And now guess what? It's all been fast-tracked through the FDA. And now we can be injected with RNAi type vaccines. Now we have this never before seen bourbon virus this guy dies from. But hey, the government takes care of us. And remember, all those anti-vaxxers out there, those are the people who are your enemy because they are the ones who are causing you to be exposed to disease. Don't look behind the curtain. Don't look at all the crazy shit that we're developing that we're using you as guinea pigs for. Here's what I find interesting, too. Back to that story about moving all the pathogens to Kansas State University. The NBAF, which is the National Bio and Agro Defense Facility in Manhattan, Kansas, is currently under construction, not destruction. Should be, though, and will not be fully operational until 2018. So to minimize any disruption, much of the work done at Plum Island, an aging major biosafety level 3 animal disease research facility, will be transferred to Kansas State University. So right now, all that shit that had been on Plum Island is at Kansas State University, not in a level 3 bio lab because that's not quite done yet. And guess what they're doing with Plum Island? I dug this up on Friday. This is from August of 2013, so who knows where it is now because I couldn't find much else. U.S. moves ahead on plan to sell Plum Island, home of a research laboratory, like the way they titled that in the New York Times. It is figured in conspiracy theories involving government experimentation with odd hybrid animals, a la Dr. Moreau. Isn't that hysterical? I've been saying that for a long time. It was also mentioned in Silence of the Lambs as a place fit for the serial killer Hannibal Lecter. And you know, here's the thing that gets me. I went to go see my family this past week because it was vacation for the kids. We had to get out of here. It's like The Shining, us all being buried in snow for months on end. And my dad and I got to watch some good fear porn on the Sci-Fi Channel. Trying to remember what it was called. Oh, it was 12 Monkeys. And I hadn't seen any of it yet, so I totally caught up. And then following 12 Monkeys was this other show that we watched one episode, but it's kind of lame, called Helix. Helix as in DNA. But what's very interesting about watching all this fear porn television is that, because remember, I don't do it very often, is that the way they were spinning it at the end, and I don't remember if it was 12 Monkeys or if it was Helix, but one of the shows, they then at the very end, they're like, oh, go out to our website and you can participate in the conspiracy theory. They had this whole thing about the government creating these vaccines and trialing them on people without their knowledge, the conspiracy theories, come and participate. And I was like, holy shit. That's exactly the point. Let's put out these shows so it gets into the American psyche that, yes, there are all these dangerous viruses out here, but it's science fiction. And then let's create this website where the crazy science fiction people can go participate in the conspiracy theories of the government testing this untested Isle of Dr. Moreau shit on the population. So when those of us who are really watching this, who are digging deep into the technology that's really being used and connecting all these dots as to how they're doing this, start raising the red bell, going, hey, guys, you don't want to put the shit into your kid. Maybe you should look into what they're using. It's in the psyche now that we are lunatics. We're conspiracy theorists. We're just like Trekkies. We're crazy people. I mean, you could so clearly see the psyop that they are playing. And it's disgusting. I mean, any retard that is buying into the fact that these guys are on our side and they're looking out for you and your family's best interest, I guess they deserve the fucking frontal lobotomy, don't they? When I saw a story on Friday, Pigmine actually dropped it to me about Food Babe. They've been assassinating Food Babe in the mainstream media. Do a search. Do a search on Google for Food Babe. And I mentioned this on Friday, but I don't remember her name. Henry, something Henry. But you'll find it if you search Food Babe. Food Babe's a lunatic or Food Babe, you know, something like that. Start looking. There was an article in Jezebel, very fittingly named publication. And when you went down into, first of all, the story was just eviscerated the woman. And she's the one who raises the red bell, red alarm, whatever you want to call it, the gong, about a lot of the shit that they're putting in our food. And they're calling her an absolute lunatic because she thinks that, you know, yoga mat byproduct in your bread is a bad thing. And when you scroll down to the comments, and I think SLC Mike read those after I dropped it into chat, you literally want to go stand on a mountain and scream, how fucking stupid are you people? These people were just so in la-la land, completely believing that everything in our food and everything that they're doing in this Frankenstein science gone absolutely mad is safe for us and looking out for our best interest. And that she is just completely off the rails insane. Now, this is why I'm saying I think we're going to have to dedicate an entire month to mind control. Because obviously the fluoride and our educational system and the TV propaganda has done its job. And when I see stuff like that, I just think to myself, we're absolutely doomed as a human race. If we're that fucking stupid that the majority of the American public is just eating this shit up hook, line, and sinker and pointing at us like we're the freaks, then maybe we all deserve it. I think it's time for the human race to start over from 1.0, big asteroid, come down and get rid of the vermin. I mean, seriously, have we devolved mentally to that point where there is not one iota of mental capacity to think and research for yourself? And then when you add to that the FDA fraud that we've read about and how far it goes, how can you trust anything that science is putting out right now? And then, you know, I mean, add all the different layers of the big pharma funding all these studies, Monsanto and all the GMO companies funding these studies that say this shit is safe. And everyone just going, yeah, we're getting rich. It's all about money. It's all about the bottom line budget. R&D line item becomes zero. Remember, I told you that. Keep the stockholders happy. And by doing that, you reduce costs. Well, no. By reducing costs, you keep the stockholders happy. And you can reduce costs by reducing the trillions of dollars you used to spend in research and development. And now let's tie in like everything we talked about. Precision healthcare, Obamacare, the electronic medical health records, $29.95 a month, sell a subscription fee of all everybody's health issues in a database to these biopharma military industrial complexes. And hey, we got a party and everybody's happy. Congress is making their money hands over fist, and maybe we'll end up with 70% of them as millionaires in 2015. All right, let's go back to what the plans are for Plum Island. So we haven't even finished the facility in Kansas, but we've given everything to the university, and like I feel so confident that Kansas University is like a level 3 bio base. With the, and I mean, this story from the New York Times, dude, they make it sound like, you know, Plum Island was home of research, blah. But the Department of Homeland Security article said it was a level three bio lab. This is just crazy. All right, so hold on, beep, 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 back to New York Times. So we discussed Hannibal Lecter and how crazy, you know, those crazy people who watch movies and thought that Plum Island was anything special. In real life, they say, New York Times says, it was home to, yeah, a high-security federal laboratory that did important research. Not that you need to know what that important research is, dumb American public. It was just, no, it was important research on contagious animal diseases. Now, with one of the final federal decisions having been announced this week, which was August 30, 2013, Plum Island is much closer to being sold, though probably at a price to even make Dr. Moreau think twice. They had to mention him again. The General Services Administration and the Department of Homeland Security, which are jointly overseeing the sale of the island, released, quote, a record decision on Thursday night to help clear the way for an eventual sale that has been in the works since actually 2008, when the government floated the idea, since approved, of moving the Animal Disease Center to Manhattan. But that's Manhattan, Kansas. Yes, right in the heartland. And a story that when this first came out and we dug into it, a story had come out pointing out the fact that not only, because I mean, I had called bullshit. I'm like, why would you move something that's offshore right into the middle of the heartland? But this other story came out and said, not only is it in the middle of the heartland, but it's in the middle of Tornado Alley. Talk about like tempting fate beyond fate. Let's put this level 3 facility right in the middle of Tornado Alley. That sounds absolutely like the brightest idea I've ever heard. So anyway, back to this New York Times story about selling Plum Island. The agency said that they had been determined to move ahead with the plans for an eventual sale, concluding that the island and its facilities would deteriorate if they were to remain in federal hands. Because, hey, we got $1.2 trillion to dedicate to bombs, to brain research, to all this other bullshit. But we don't have any money to secure or properly get rid of this federal facility that's been doing level 3 bio research since the days of bringing the Nazi scientists over after World War II. Federal studies have already deemed the island suitable for what? Yes, up to 500 private homes. Yeah, you heard me right. So is this Love Canal 2.0? I mean, are we really going to put 500 private homes on this island off the coast of New York so it's going to become another, what, Fire Island, Long Island, multi-fucking-billion-dollar rich bastards living off the coast somewhere? And we're going to put homes on the site of former Level 3 bio-terror center. That's great. And then they kind of just spice it up. They're like, home to populations of terns and seals and sea turtles, to name a few species that have made it a habitat. So, like, they're pointing out, look at how safe it is. The island spans about 840 acres. A coalition of nearly 60 environmental and civic groups have been seeking to stave off a sale, or at least to ensure that much of the island remains protected and under the management of the Federal Fish and Wildlife Service after the transfer to private ownership. The groups also question whether or not, hey, there's been enough study of the potential environmental hazards on the island after so many years of sensitive government use. But hey, those are the conspiracy fucking whack jobs. I just can't even believe when I see this stuff and the spin that they put on this shit in mainstream media to make anyone who is looking logically. Okay, where the hell is logic today? There isn't any. The people that are looking at this stuff logically and scientifically, who have nothing to gain. I have nothing to gain in digging into virus-like particles or trying to discover what the effects could possibly be on the body of a 9-year-old. Where is that journalism? No, let's just spin it that anyone who questions anything that they're doing right now is a complete and utter lunatic. And you know what? Eventually, it's going to be forced medication because I don't know. I might have oppositional defiance disorder. DSM-5. All right. I don't know if I'm going to read any more about the sale of Plum Island. I'll drop this to you. It's kind of a long story. But you know what? I say let's let the elites build 500 mansions there. And all end up growing left arms out of their forehead. Because, you know, if they're that stupid to move to Plum Island, I guess they deserve every tick-borne disease they get. All right, I'm going to go back to this Department of Homeland Security publication. Here it is. So we're moving it all. We're moving it all to the University of Kansas. It'll not be fully operational until 2018, so to minimize any disruption, much of the work done at Plum Island, an aging major biosafety level 3 animal disease research facility, will be transferred to Kansas State University. Stephen Higgs, a research director at the Biosecurity Research Institute at Kansas State, recently spent 2 weeks at Plum Island discussing the transition process. Essentially, the BRI, Biosecurity Research Institute at Kansas State, is going to be a springboard to get the NBAF, the National Bio and Agri Defense Facility, research going as soon as possible after it opens, he says. As Plum Island ramps down, we are making sure that there is not a drop-off in research and training on these pathogens. That's important because we cannot afford to have a period where there's not work being done on these diseases should one of them happen to come to America. Oh, like what? Bourbon's disease? Like where? In Kansas. Holy shit. I better play the lottery. And what I love is that this story was from last year, but notice how as all this stuff is ramping up, they had to pull this one out from under the covers and remind everybody of it. Of course, they didn't mention the Plum Island move in that story. Good thing there's people like us with good memories. Where did I leave off here? Okay, so far, no date has been finalized for when the research will be transferred to BRI. Now, this story is from 2012, so I can pretty much guarantee you that it's got to be moved there by now. I mean, we're talking, what, it's 3 years later? It's got to be moved there. Or at least partially. Or, hey, maybe that's where, remember, the CDC was caught with smallpox sitting on the tops of filing cabinets last year and transferring highly virulent materials in Ziploc baggies. So maybe they put them on a bus on a Greyhound in a Ziploc baggie in the carriage hold and sent them all to Kansas. So far, no data has been finalized when the research will be transferred to BRI, but Kansas researchers in Kansas have already begun work on projects related to disease studies at Plum Island, like the African swine fever and high path avian influenza. Yes, 2012, those avian influenzas were still raging everywhere, as well as the swine flus. And here's the thing, you got to remember too, that avian influenza was part of the Blue Angel Project. The drowning of GMO tobaccos in some sort of nanotech substance using mice cells sucked out, human cells pumped in, RNAi, nanotech. I mean, guys, this is all connected. It is all completely off the rail, insane science that is happening all over now. And nobody's watching the store. And it's just a matter of time. They're priming the pump for some of this shit to get out. They're totally priming the pump for some of this shit to get out. And the fact that I'm watching all these dystopian pathogen shows now on TV, they're putting it into the psyche. Researchers at Kansas State have also been installing specialized equipment to study diseases like the newly purchased insectary, which will help scientists work on what? Ho-ho! Insects spread diseases. Kind of like ticks. Higgs said that all these new developments have greatly benefited Kansas State by creating all kinds of new research opportunities. Moving these projects from Plum Island to BRI really, really opens up new possibilities for infectious disease research at K-State that hasn't been possible in the past. And these high-priority pathogens of major concern because they are a threat to our agricultural system. I really see this as being a whole new era at Kansas State University. You know, I would really like to know what type of level 3 facility they have at Kansas State. So there's that story. I dropped that as well into chat from Homeland Security Newswire. Oh, where do we go from here? We got 7 minutes left. Let's see. Oh, you know what? We are going to play 2 videos. We, of course, have this new superbug that just appeared at UCLA that we looked at last week with those endoscopes that can't be properly cleaned ever, never were able to be. And, oh, what? The FDA knew all about it. Yes, they did. There's another person. It's a team fighting for life. So there's a few people. I saw they rolled out Sanjay Gupta again. Sanjay Gupta, FDA has known that the device could spread the deadly bacteria. Guys, again, be afraid. Be very afraid because our government's going to save us. That's what this is all about. Get on your knees, open your mouth, and say, ah. All right. Let's connect. All right. We're going to listen to 2 videos here. Teen Fighting for Life at UCLA with the super bug. Brand new.
After that super bug outbreak in the West, the deadly infection at UCLA Medical Center, 2 dead, 5 sickened, including a teenager. Tonight, his family furious with the makers of a certain piece of medical equipment, arguing they're too hard to clean. Nearly 180 patients exposed, and that warning now for hospitals across the country. ABC's Cecilia Vega on the infections patients can get after they're already in the hospital.
As an 18-year-old victim of a superbug outbreak at this Los Angeles hospital fights for his life, UCLA's Ronald Reagan Medical Center says patients were exposed by an endoscope contaminated from a past procedure.
There were two endoscopes that were used that had a CRE infection embedded in them.
The potentially deadly superbug known as CRE is so powerful it is resistant to antibiotics. Superbugs are most commonly spread in hospitals by contaminated equipment, but even simple physical contact, such as a nurse changing a bandage on a patient, can spread the infection. Since 2001, the superbug has made its way into all but three states. UCLA now says it followed manufacturer sterilization guidelines. The patient's lawyer tonight promising to sue the manufacturer of the scope, saying they are too hard to clean.
The goal is to hold them accountable for civil damages.
But UCLA now has even stricter sanitation standards in place. So do a handful of other hospitals.
And Cecilia just arriving here in New York after reporting from that hospital, and now that FDA warning for the whole country.
Yeah, the whole country, doctors and hospitals all across this country, because there is so much on the line in this case. 23,000 deaths every year from superbugs in this country, 600 just because of the CRE alone. The company that makes the scopes in the Los Angeles case telling us that it is now working with the FDA and these hospitals to address all of these concerns that are out there.
All right, Cecilia, we'll see you here at the anchor desk tomorrow night. Thank you.
Again, working with the FDA because the FDA works so hard to keep your ass safe. Well, hey, here we go. Do they really? Don't believe. I'm telling you, do not believe anything these people tell you.
I mean, this is pretty incredible. And when people hear this, they say, what is it about this particular instrument? You went today to look at it. What was your impression of it? And what is it that makes it a superbug carrier?
Well, let me preface by saying, Aaron, you know, I've worked in hospitals for a long time, a few decades now, and I've never seen anything quite like this just in terms of the cleaning process. So one of the things about this device, it's a scope, but it has a little mechanism right at the very end. So it's the elevator, if you will. It allows the scope to do certain things once it's already inside the body. But it's that very area, Aaron, that you're looking at right there that can also trap bacteria. And whatever type of cleaning, you can soak that in fluids, you can do whatever you want that you would normally do, but unless you actually get around that elevating mechanism, it may not be completely clean. And it is a bit concerning because it really relies on a human element to make that as clean as possible.
And I mean, as you point out, and just looking at those pictures, I mean, how incredibly hard this is to clean. That's at the heart of the outbreak, right? I mean, I know some hospitals have protocols. They say, look, a human being has to clean this scope. Others don't. And those are the ones where the superbug, where people are at risk of this superbug. How do you clean this thing right?
Yeah, it's quite remarkable because it's a $30,000 piece of equipment, right? And,
wow.
And again, you have all sorts of different cleaning machines and ovens and sinks and all that. But in order to really get down to the nitty gritty, if you will, it requires brushes. And as you see right here, Aaron, in fact, a 99-cent toothbrush even to really get in there and do that. At least that's what they've been using at this hospital where I was shooting the story. They say they've not had any infections in 18 years that they have found. They have a nearly perfect track record. But it requires this sort of diligence, a 99-cent toothbrush. And you know what? It also takes the fortitude of the guy that you see doing it there because he's just one of these diligent guys. He said at the end of this, I said, are you confident it's clean? He said, I would use it on my two sons. I'd use it on my mother. I'd use it on myself. He was 100% confident. But, that human element of safety just became so magnified in my mind watching him do his work. If you don't have a guy like that, you don't have the right brushes, you may have a problem.
And you know what's shocking here is the FDA knew the cleaning guidelines didn't always work, right? Because this has happened before, as we point out, over years.
Right.
We know superbugs can kill up to half the people who may become infected. And this obviously can happen in hospitals. I mean, doctors say, look, the worst place to be sick is in a hospital because you got all kinds of drug-resistant bacteria that can get in your body, they can kill you. But I guess the outrage is here, why would the FDA have let these companies keep in guidelines that didn't necessarily clean this thing when people could die?
Yeah, it's a bit concerning. And, you know, as you pointed out, they released the safety communication, but they've known about this for some time. What I can tell you is that when they say make sure and clean around the crevasses of that elevator, how anybody interprets that message can be very different. And this,
I got to stop because we're just about out of time. But yeah, so the FDA fully knew but didn't really do much of anything about it. And again, how conveniently so. Apparently, Barack Obama is psychic because September 18, 2014, executive order combating antibiotic-resistant bacteria, oversight and coordination combating antibiotic-resistant bacteria is a national security priority, people. The National Security Council staff, in collaboration with the Office of Science and Technology Policy, the Domestic Policy Council, and the Office of Management and Budget, shall coordinate and develop and implement federal policies to combat antibiotic-resistant bacteria. So good for you, Department of State, Department of Justice, Department of Veteran Affairs, Department of Homeland Security, EPA, the United States Agency for International Development, the Office of Management and Budget, Domestic Policy Council, National Security Council, Office of Science and Technology, National Science Foundation, and other executive departments will be involved. Wow. So here it comes. I just love the way they set this shit up. All right, guys, it's Monday night. Make sure you stick around. There's going to be a brand new Truth on the Tracks tonight. Not sure what we're going to do with United Front Radio. Poor Daniela has been running ragged with this Reverend Pinckney thing, so we'll have to figure out something there. We are now running a Chelly Effect Rewind. He gave me a list of 12 or 15 decent interviews that he's done that are going to be running in that Monday slot. And hey, I don't hear my bumper, so maybe, I don't know, something's not right here, but that's all right. And Nick Burnaby with Anti-Media Radio. Nick and DB are going to be live tonight at 11. And there we go. All right, guys. Everyone have an awesome Monday. We are going to pick up with this tomorrow. Oh, what a tangled web they weave. All right, guys. Stay warm. All you people down south, stay out of the ice. Careful, take care.